everyone. Thanks for tuning into this week's message. My name is Alessandra, and I'm part of the team here at Friends Church. Everything we do around here depends 100% on the generous donations of our local and online community. That's people just like you who believe that life is really about leaving a positive mark on our world. So if you love what Friends Church is up to, I'd like to encourage you to contribute by going to friendschurch.ca. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
Glad you're here. Whether you're in live in person, which is becoming more and more a challenge every week, hang on. And for those that are watching us on live stream, welcome to you too. Look, I got a couple things that I want to just make sure that you know about. This Christmas music starts, we're gearing up for Christmas coming in. We got a Christmas Eve service. We're planning actually a couple tentatively right now, 4 and 6, that's coming up Christmas Eve. If you don't have plans, plan to be here. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be amazing. Socially distanced. It's going to be a mandatory registration so we can control traffic and whatever. At least that's the plan right now. We're going full on. But our Christmas hamper program, we mentioned last week, we interviewed, showed an interview anyways of Lauren Raymore and the Connections Agency, the agency that we're working with to sponsor a bunch of families this Christmas. It's one of the highlights of our year. Our entire community jumps in and starts purchasing gifts and needed items for families that are struggling in Calgary. We're sponsoring 20 families. Normally, we'd have trees out in the lobby where you could grab a card that would have all the information and all the different needs of a particular person. You'd go away, purchase, bring them back here, and then we'd wrap them all just prior to us getting ready to deliver them. This year with COVID, we are switching gears to completely online, and I want to just tell you quickly how to do that. All you have to do is go to friendschurch.ca/hampers. Hampers. That's all you have to do. Go to this website. Once you go and click in that web address, it's going to take you to this screen. And this is where we'll just collect your name, your email address, and your phone number. And we're doing it this way so that rather than you just going and putting it on one big spreadsheet where everyone can see all your contact information, if you fill out this screen first, we can see your contact information. No one else can. Once you put your information in, you click submit, it will take you to this screen. That's simply a link that takes you to the grand master list of all the different needs. Click on that link and it will take you to this screen. This is a Google form, and basically it will walk you through all, each line on this spreadsheet represents one person, a female right there, person 1A, age 37, female. She has this size of clothing, this size of shoe. These are her needs and these are her wishes. And there's notes there if they have allergies or whatever. What you're going to do is you're going to scroll through the list and you're going to find a person you want to sponsor. Once you have found the person, the line that you, and maybe you want to do more than one, that's entirely up to you. You'll scroll over to the right side. That's column J. You'll notice it says select your name from the list on the specific line that has the gift you'd like to purchase. See that these little arrows? That represents a drop down. All you have to do is click on that little arrow, and this is what happens. Your name will appear on a list of names that are already in there. All you have to do is find your name on that list and click it. Then it will go, bing, there's your name that will show up in that. And that's all you have to do to sign up to sponsor a person. We haven't listed their names just to keep it anonymous, but it represents a person. Once you've done that, we will contact you, remind you of what you have signed up for, and right at the top of that Google form, it gives you the date when everything is due by. We'll bring it here to the office. We'll need your gift card or your gifts brought here to the office. We'll get it all ready. Now, if all goes according to plan, on the 20th of December, we are going to divide up between this room and the social hall for our big socially distanced wrapping party. We're taking the whole morning. Rather than a service, there'll be some music, live music playing. We're going to wrap all the gifts, get them ready, load them onto a big truck where we will then deliver them to the agency and they will then distribute to the families. That's the plan. We hope you can be a part of this. We hope you'll go online and help us take care of these families in need. One last thing, the Values Workshop is today. And because of COVID, we've taken it online. If you've signed up for it, you will have a message in your inbox giving you the Zoom link and all that. It's all on Zoom, and it's going to be amazing. So if you're signed up, don't miss that. It starts at 1. Vince.
Good morning. I did a little head count. There's like 35 of us here today, so I think the whole capacity of this auditorium might be like 400, 300 for sure. So we're all safe, right? So welcome to Friends Church here and online. I was thinking as I prepare to come up, the parts that are really important. To thank all those donors who continue to contribute to us. We are self-driven. We're self-funded. All this happens because of that. The other part is that, you know, when I grew up in a church, there was this silver plate that went around, and I watched my grandmother always put in an envelope, and there'd be something inside of that, and it would go to the church. That's not around. So if a person doesn't have a church background like I do, you wouldn't know how this all works anyways. So for those of you who keep coming and you're wondering, like, how does this place run? It's all self-funded, and we used to have a black box. We don't have that anymore. So it can all be done online through our app. And if Friends Church is giving you something that you didn't have before, if you're finding value in that, please contribute. We're online more than ever before. And if you go to, if you're like Sundays, I'm usually at the gym doing a recovery ride after a long run on a Saturday. So I'll watch online. And I notice every now and then, like, we don't have a lot of reviews. So I'm going to give everyone Vince's address so that you can go to his house for a free dinner. All you have to do is go on to iTunes or wherever you listen to Friends Church and leave a review, because we're trying to win the Best Church of the Year award. And we need more reviews. So money helps, yes. Christmas hampers, incredibly important. Reviews to let people know, because again, we're not the normal mainstream church. We're that place for people who don't fit church. And this guy, his name is Vince. He's very shy. He's going to do this. So we all know. Can we just give him a little welcome? Because he's shy. He's shy. He's handsome. We're both named Vince's, so Vince Square. He prefers Vincent. So,
thanks, thank you. Vince. Thanks, Vince. Do I actually want to thank him for that?
I was gentle.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Friends Church. We've actually had over 200 people physically attend this space since we were able to reopen. That's a lot of people who are looking for a new form of spirituality, isn't it? And you all are part of this, right? Kind of going, well, we're locked down. Netflix is getting boring. What else can I do with my life? So just a show of hands to get you moving a little bit. Anyone hear Jeff's message last week? Really good message, really good message. He talked about this, your phones. You notice how mine's in my back pocket? I'm literally public speaking with a phone in my back pocket, just in case I get an important text that I need to answer, right? That's a joke, everybody, come on. I'm not going to text in the middle of this, although if my wife texts me, I might. Jeff's message talked about this idea that phones and social media have moved into addiction land. We're spending more and more time. People are spending hours a day on their phones. He's talking about how our phones are designed to keep our attention, and that attention is monetized, it's sold. And Jeff's message said, maybe we should think deeply about how we interact with our phones and social media. I thought it was a great message. But I have this weird brain. So during his message, and again, it's lovely, he's doing a great job, we're all being moved by it, but here's what's going on in my head. Why shouldn't I be on my phone? You ever thought about that? Why shouldn't you be on your phone? Let's say you put your kids, so those of you who have kids, I don't have kids, but let's just say you have kids. Kids are in bed, you're living my life, right? Got nothing to do, nothing but time. Why not spend a couple hours going through Instagram looking at photos of DIY audio projects? Why not? What, again, Jeff's message got me thinking is, what is our time for? What is my time for? What is your time for? If you're anything like me, I felt this low-level guilt about being on my phone. But then I thought, why am I feeling guilt? But it took me down this train of thought of where I want to go today. If I have spare time, if you have spare time, if we have spare money, if we have spare talent, if we have spare anything, where are we using it? That's what I want us to wrestle with today. Because the reality is, I have this metaphor that I use. The reality is, we're all dealt a hand. Let me do it this way. I brought a set of cards here. Okay. Let's just say, can I get a volunteer? Just put up your hand. I won't shame you. I just want someone to be the person. Okay. Carl, Ashley, one more over here. Someone over here. Perfect. You, I don't know your name, but thank you. Anyone over here? Mr. Fowler, thank you. Okay. So, Carl, in education, or the gift you were given when you're born about how your brain works, that has to do with how well you do in school, you got a 3. Sorry, buddy. School is always hard for you, right? Stuff. Okay, Ashley, you got a king. Ho ho! You're killing it in school, right? It's easy for you. No worries. She's just like, oh, I love it. Okay, over here, queen. Well done. School is easy for you, right? High marks, no work, right? It's exactly how it was. Mr. Fowler, oh, 2. For those of you who couldn't hear, he says that's accurate. Our school, kind of the intelligence that we need for school, one of the things you need in school is abstract intelligence. We all were born with a certain hand that we were dealt, right? I got a certain amount of abstract intelligence. For me, I got a really high number in that. I don't know why, but my brain, how it thinks is how school testing works. So I always found school really easy. Now, what if we talk about relationships? The ability to read emotions in another person. Carl, you got a 6. Kind of like middle of the road. Not bad. I'll put you that with your 3. You got a 4, Ashley. Sorry. Over here, 2. This feels like mine. This should be my number. Oh, Mr. Fowler, 4. He's looking at it going, I don't think so. What if we see the world through a lens of a randomly dealt hand? It's like the universe deals us a hand when we're born, and that's the hand we play for the rest of our lives. Think about that. Carl, that's the hand you dealt. That's the hand you're going to play. Now, we can do some work with these hands, right? I'm about a -4 in emotional intelligence. If there was a card that was like negative numbers, that's me. I've had to work. You guys don't realize how much work I've done to read facial expressions, to be able to read emotions. I actually took a class in how to see what emotion someone else is feeling. At the beginning, I failed the class. That's how bad I am. Abstract intelligence? No problems. Reading facial expressions, I am remedial at best. If you're like me, there's a course by a guy named Paul Ekman. I highly recommend it. It will change your life. But if we take it back to this idea that says, I have this time that I'm spending on social media, whatever this is, the thing that we do to numb ourselves out. We have this time, we have talent, we have money, we have capacity, we have luck. When you look at this card, I was born to a poor family, but in a very rich nation. I'm 1% of the 1%, right? Did I do anything to deserve that? No, I was just born. It's just That's the card we got. We all get the ace on this one. So we have time, we have capacity, we have money. And then we, on the other hand, we have this hand that's been dealt to us. And the question I want to ask today is, how do we play the hand that we're dealt? Do we do it here? Do we do it on Netflix? For me, do we do it on ultramarathoning? Where I just spend hours and hours and hours by myself in the mountains running. There's a story from our spiritual tradition. It's about a couple of people. This lady, she's really wealthy. She decides to go on a trip. And so she calls, they don't have the internet back in the Bible days, so she can't run her business from, you know, wherever she is. That's not a thing. She has to be physically present, and so since she's leaving her business, she has to have somebody else run it. So she calls three of her employees. First one, they've been running her affairs for, you know, ever. They grew up in a family that had money. They're just money people, right? So she gives them $1 million and says, okay, I'm going to be gone for a couple years. Take care of that money. So off they go. Second person comes in. They're not quite as good as the first person. You know, the first person's been running $1 million budgets their whole life. It's no big deal for them. This person, a little less. They've been running a smaller group. So she gives them $10,000 and says, here's the money. Do good with it. Make me money. And then she calls in the last person. The last person is the point of the story. This person, the hand that they were dealt when it comes to finances, twos and fours. Kind of like me. I grew up in a small town to a blue-collar family, hardworking. My parents worked their asses off. But we never had money. Money was, we had food to eat. There was no excess money to invest or to try and use to do something better. It was literally hand to mouth. So I basically have a 2-4 in terms of financial education. I'm the person who that owner would have given the $1,000 to because they're going, I don't know about this guy. I don't think he knows anything. And that's how the story reads. They said, the people got according to the hand they were dealt. The owner comes back after 2 years, brings in the first employee. The first employee got the $1 million. It starts off like this. They know money. They've invested their whole life. Their families had money. They've invested their whole lives. They understand how this works. They understand the risk. They understand how to create money. And so the investment started off at $1 million, then it went to 1.1, then 0.9, then a pandemic hit and it was 0.7. They climbed it back up. Now we're at 1.4, 1.5. After a number of years, the $1 million turns into $2 million. When the owner comes back and says, hey, calls that employee, I gave you $1 million. What'd you do with it? The person said, well, here's the investment portfolio, $2 million. Well done. Again, that person, the hand they were dealt was an ace. They understand money. They understand how to make money. Second person starts off with $10,000. The person said, how'd you do? $20,000. Yeah, well done. But then the last person comes in, and the last person, I think, is us. Because whatever number, for me, my financial education, not big. Wherever you were dealt a 1-2, in this case, 2-4, reading relationships, ability to self-regulate, financial awareness, school smarts, business acumen, you know, whatever in your life you've been dealt a low hand. I have a friend who is an addict, and we talk often about the hand he was dealt. In some cases, he got really high numbers. In other cases, they're incredibly low. And he's been fighting with them his whole life. So wherever you have that low number, wherever you struggle, wherever the hand you were dealt is a difficult hand, that's what this story represents. They call us into the room and say, wherever you struggle the most, wherever you're dealt the lowest hand, in this case, you have no financial education, I gave you $1,000, what'd you do with it? And the person says this, can you throw it up on the screen for me? Said, I know you're strict and I was scared that you would lose. I would lose your money and then you'd be angry with me. So I dug a hole in my backyard and I hid your money. I didn't risk any of it. I didn't put any time into it. I knew, or you knew I didn't have any skill with money, so I had nothing to offer there. So here's your $1,000. You see, when they were given the $1,000, when we are given whatever that thing is in our lives that we're a low number on, they went into the backyard, dug a hole, and buried it. And then probably went home and went on their phones and played on social media for the next 6 years. Did nothing with it. They buried it in the backyard and ignored it. When I read this story, when I thought about the hand that I was dealt, the first thing that popped in my mind is, where in my life have I buried something? Some talent, some of my time, some of my capacity. I just buried it in the backyard and didn't do anything with it. It's a sobering thought, isn't it? Jeff's message was powerful because it pointed to the times when we've buried something in the backyard and now we're just killing time. And so this story asks me, and I think it asks all of us, what have we buried and ignored? Where have we not lived to the potential we had? The owner says this to the person. If you're a literalist in the Bible, and I'm not at all, but there's people out there who are literalists, it essentially says this. The business owner took that person and said, throw them into hell. They said, to the place where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. What a horrific judgment. But more so because I can feel there's areas in my life that I just buried in the backyard and ignored it. Part of my hell was I lost a marriage. I got a 2 in emotional intelligence. That's the hand I was dealt. And I did nothing with it. It's sobering, isn't it? As soon as I read this story, my first thought was, oh, that's horrible. My second thought was, okay, but seriously, all I got was a 2. There's people out there who got way higher cards than I did. Like, seriously, I shouldn't be held responsible for this. Like, what did I? I got a 2, right? There's nothing I can do about the 2. Anyone feel that desire to squirm out of this thing? Because the first story feels like, ugh. I'm like, okay, I got to get out of this somehow. And we see it all the way through social media. The joke now is intersectionality points. And this is where the comedians come in. How many times have we heard jokes, comedians calling one group out against another group? Calling out, okay, you were dealt this hand, but we were dealt this hand. Or you think you're the victim? Yeah, but you got this hand. I heard Dave Chappelle talk from Saturday Night Live. Did anyone watch the monologue from? It's hilarious. He's like, okay, so you all white folks, you're in this like, oh no, there's a pandemic. Well, you know what? Us black folks have been living with this our whole lives. If you want some lessons, come over. We'll teach you guys some things. Right? You white folks think you got dealt a 2. And now you're playing the victim. There's nothing we can do. Blah, blah, blah. I was raised poor. I'm not that smart. You know, I fit outside the majority. So another card. You know what? If you're born into the majority, it's kind of like getting an automatic ace. I'm not trying to guilt you guys on the hands you're dealt. That's not what I'm trying to do here at all. I'm just trying to point it out. My comment is, how are we using the hand that we're dealt? If you're born into the majority, like I was, I'm a white, male, straight for the most part, married twice, that's pretty normal. I'm part of the majority. Life is easier when you're part of the majority. When I was dating and I met a girl that I thought was pretty cool, I didn't have to worry about whether or not she sat in another group that was very, very small. I could just walk up to her and say, hey, how's it going? Can I buy a coffee? If you're born into the minority, everything becomes more difficult for you. Someone I love in my life, small town, realized that he's gay. No problems. Except he lives in a town of 5,000 people. There's one other gay kid in his class. His entire school. Who's he going to date? I said, are you attracted to him? He's like, no. Well, your town's done. You're screwed. Sorry, buddy. Right? It's not, there's no judgment. It's just, he got a 2. It's harder for him. It's not worse. I love him. I want him to have the best life possible. But he was born in a minority group in a small town where his group is so small, there's no one to connect with. We have this idea of, and comedians call it out all the time, intersectionality points. Intersectionality is a beautiful concept. If you read the original documents of where it came from, it's beautiful. Now it's this game that we play that says, my hand is lower than your hand, therefore I have nothing I need to do. I wasn't born being able to read emotions, therefore you're better than me and I'm a victim here, right? Anyone hear victimhood through all sorts of things? That's Dave Chappelle. Oh, you white guys are victims? Good try. Jesus tells us, actually, there's a story attributed to Jesus. It's a beautiful story. Has anyone ever heard the term, turn the other cheek? Right? I grew up in a Mennonite community, which means it's Anabaptist, which means it's anti-violence, anti-war specifically. Anyone read in the news about Steinbeck and what's going on there? Yeah, that's where my dad lives. Good times. So Jesus says this line, turn the other cheek. And at first when I grew up, I always thought of it as I'm the punching bag. The way to live out my spirituality was somebody insult me and I would just turn the other cheek and let them do it again. Somebody stole from me, I just turn the other cheek and let them do it again. Whatever they did to me that was bad, I just turn the other cheek. And so the whole point of my spirituality was to let people abuse me. Not awesome. But as I started to study this term, turn the other cheek, you have to understand where it came from. Back in the old days, we had rich people and poor people, no middle class. We had the 0.00001% that owned all the land and the people that worked for them. And here's the deal. The people who owned the land could do whatever they wanted to these poor people. But they did it in a very specific way. They'd hit them with the back of their hand that said two things. First, I don't like you and I don't like what you did. But second, you're lower class than me. If you got hit with the back of someone's hand, first, ouch. And second, it was, you're less than human. So what happens when you turn the other cheek? Someone hits you with this part of their hand and you turn the other cheek. What part of the hand do they have to hit you with? This part of the hand you only used for an equal. This part, you're less than me. This part, equal. Here's a person who basically lives on a farm that probably they inherited from their families. They have no other money. They live off that farm. If there's a drought year, they're dead. They're hoping that there will be enough stuff that they can grow that they can support their family and maybe an animal or two. and that that will hold them through to the end of whatever life they have. Subsistence farming. It's literally, you're on the edge of death at all times. And if anything happened, your goat got a goat disease. I don't know. Is there goat diseases? You had a drought and your crops died. What you would do is you'd go to the rich, the very, very rich, and you'd say, can you please give me a loan? They'd say, sure. But you have to give us your land as collateral. Now, what do you think the odds are, if you can't support your family, that you can now support your family and pay back a loan at the same time? Not going to happen. Within usually months, you lost your land. You now worked for somebody who treated you like an animal. And when they didn't like what you did, they'd come and they'd hit you at the back of their hand. You're a dog. You're nothing. I own you. And this is the beauty of what Jesus says. He says, you think in that moment you have no power. And this is where I think the story is about us. You got dealt a two in whatever part of your life. Your health, your size, your beauty, your talent. You had help to do. And so you're going, there's nothing I can do. I have no power. I'm that person getting hit with the back of the hand by life. And Jesus says, all you need to do is turn the other cheek. And in that moment, you force a person to see you as a human. To hit you, they have to hit you with the open hand, which in their culture says, wait, you're equal to me. You're the same as me. You thought you had no power? So think about the story. You walk into the story as the lowest of the low, getting hit for whatever somebody wants, and without any power, with a two, a social two, that you have no money, no status, no nothing. Jesus says, in one move, you can find power. You turn the other cheek and say, hit me again as an equal. I remember reading this story and going, holy crap. How much of our lives are we stuck on these numbers where we say, yeah, but they have more. They're better. They got dealt a better hand than I did. It's not fair. I don't have anything. There's what can I do? I'm just, you know, whatever, single parent, born into a family of dysfunction, you know, not good at school, I'm an addict, whatever your two is, you're going, that's all I have. And Jesus says, actually, no, you can turn the other cheek. There's power in your life if you're willing to look for it. So the question I'm wrestling with right now is, where is there power in my life that I'm not even willing to look for? I'm too busy focused on the fact that I can't read emotions. The thing I want you to wrestle with is the same thing. Where in your life do you feel powerless? And where is that an excuse to go numb out on your phone? To say, what can I do? I got a two. I'm profoundly fascinated by how people play the hand they were dealt. Because I'm trying to play my hand. I think you're all trying to play your hand too. And there's this tendency to bury part of my life in the sand and numb out instead of using it. There's a tendency to go toward victimhood and saying, yeah, but what can I do? I'm this, that, and the next thing, right? Instead of seeing, actually, there's something we can do. When the business owner came back to the people who invested their money, she brought that $1,000 person in. She said, I get that you don't have good investment prowess. I get that you're a two. You could have put my money in the bank and got interest. Everyone knows that. There's things that you could have done and you did nothing. Bill and Melinda Gates, of the Microsoft fame? Anyone know them? He's considered to be worth $1.2 billion. That's billion with a B. Jeff Bezos, $100 billion. Doesn't really have a whole lot of money compared to Gates, right? I tried to put $1.2 billion. So let's be honest. Bill Gates, when it comes to money, he got dealt an ace, right? First, he got dealt an intelligence ace because he had computer intelligence right at the beginning of the computing era. If you read Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, he actually goes through this. He has computer intelligence. There happens to be a computer just down the way from his house that's not being used in the evenings and weekends and at night. And he happens to have access to this. This is back when a computer was like the size of this whole room. This was a computer, not this. That whole room could do like a bajillionth of this. This thing is way more powerful than that. So at the beginning, he had access to the only computers in the country, basically free reign. He would skip out, instead of going drinking with his buddies, he'd go and he'd work on computers. Another ace. At the beginning of the computer revolution, another ace. Someone who has that intelligence right now, it's like, that's fine. Everyone has that intelligence. Bully for you. He happened to get a bunch of cards dealt to him that were beautiful, perfectly timed, and he made an ungodly amount of money. Anyone wish that they had that hand? Just as a note, $1.2 billion. I like to think of it in terms of motorbikes because that's what I really like. If I had $1.2 billion and I had to spend it over the next 40 years and it didn't make any more money, I would have to buy a new motorcycle every 2 days for the rest of my life. I'm not sure what I would do with those. I'd have to pay to have a big hole dug and then I'd drive the motorcycle off the cliff into the hole and then go back to the store and buy a new one. It'd just be a lot of motorcycle buying. What would you do with $1.2 billion? Here's what Bill and Melinda Gates did. They were part of curing polio. I don't know about you, but when I look at like a worldwide epidemic, I don't think there's something I can do about that. Them? They didn't say, hey, why don't we let the government take care of that or the WHO or whoever. They said, hey, maybe we should take care of that. How's that for not burying something in the backyard? Polio, I don't know if you know it, it's a disease that hits about disease is big, 0.05% of people who get polio get it really bad. I grew up with this couple named the Pierces. She had polio when she was young. She's never walked her whole life. She was in a wheelchair. She weighed like 250 pounds, and her husband had to lift her in and out of cars into wheelchairs her whole life. I still remember him trying to push her up the ramp to church. He could almost not get her up the ramp. That's what polio did. Of the 0.5% of people who get polio, 15 to 30% die. I don't know. Can you show up the pictures? Polio is something that affects limbs, affects our nervous system. It's not curable. Or it wasn't curable then. Then we figured out there's a vaccine. And people like Bill and Melinda Gates, along with other people, got this to the entire world. They estimated that it was between $40 and $60 billion is the cost of polio in the world when it was at its height. Most of the places that are paying that kind of cost are countries that have nothing. It's poor, poor countries in Africa. Countries who basically started off with a 2 and are trying to deal with a worldwide pandemic. There's no curb. There's no hospitals. There's no nothing. Because of the work that Bill and Melinda Gates did, they've eradicated polio almost completely in the entire world, giving somewhere between $40 and $60 billion back to the countries that need it most, saving lives and saving untold amounts of pain and suffering. How's that for playing the hand they were dealt? Isn't that incredible? I don't know about you, but I think, yeah, but that's them. They got a really good hand. I didn't get that hand. Mother Teresa. Her hand was basically, she's poor, she's not anywhere close to home, she doesn't really have any education. She's getting like twos and threes across the board, but she's got drive. That's her other cheek. She could have sat in a convent someplace and just said, what can I do? There's nothing I can do. Or she could turn the other cheek and say, where do I have power? Her power came from her drive. Something that we all have, right? She played that card to the point where we all know her. The entire world knows Mother Teresa because of the work she did. She took a four and played it beautifully. And it makes me ask the question, how am I playing my hand? It makes me want to ask you guys the question, how are we all playing our hands? Are we sitting at home, on our phones, numbed out, hole in the backyard, freshly covered, where we put all of our capacity, our money, time, you know, you name it. Whatever you have that could be used, talents. It's in the backyard, in a hole, doing nothing with it. Or are we using it to change our worlds? Whenever I hear this story, I don't know, it kicks me in the butt. I have someone in my life that I love deeply, but I always reach out and they don't reach out back. And so last year I stopped reaching out. I had that whole like, you know, I only got a four and I have to do all the work and blah, blah, blah. As I was writing this message, halfway through I just stopped writing and I texted them and said, hey, how you doing? When I was young, Christmas is always hard for me because when I was young, my dad got sick. And the biggest memory I have is of having Christmas with my dad in the hospital. And we didn't know if he was going to come home. We were waiting for him to die. He didn't. He's now 80-some, just got a second knee replacement. Go, Dad. But that moment of my dad, I built him a little Lego, a fully functional Lego hospital bed. Like the knee would come up and the back would come up. But I still remember walking out that Christmas Eve to go home and have Christmas dinner and just looking at my dad and going, so there's an urgency in my life. I regularly say to myself, if I die today, or if I die tomorrow, how will I be happy with how I live today? It's a sobering thought, isn't it? Ask yourself, if you died tomorrow, are you happy with how you've lived your life to this point? Have you played your hand the best you can? Have you done everything you can with that hand? Or did you just dig a hole in the backyard and bury it? Did you play the victim game and say, there's nothing I can do, people are just going to hit me and I just have to let them? You'd think with that story of my dad, this wouldn't be a problem for me, but I have to daily ask myself, Vince, and again, just the other day, why aren't you messaging that person that you love so much? You know they struggle to reach out. Why aren't you just send them a text? Say hi. How are you doing? For me, Christmas is always less about the parties and the joy. It's always about that moment that says life is short and I was dealt a hand. How am I going to play that hand? If you're new to this, I get it. If you're stuck in victim mentality, I get it. She never messages me. Why do I have to message her back? I get it. And yet, I think each one of us were dealt a hand that can make the world a better place. You're all getting that benefit right now. The band,
the hand they were dealt, musical talent, a voice, and they share it with you, right? Actually, they share it through you because they're trying to inspire you to go and share whatever you have with your world. The tech team, the people downstairs, all the volunteers that are part of Friends Church. They said, this is the hand I was dealt. How do I use it to make the world a better place? I don't want to bury it in the backyard. I want to use it. I asked one of the guys, I said, hey, did you ever think your skill in computers would actually be used to inspire people to make their world a better place? And he just laughed and said, no, it's ridiculous. If you're very, very new to this, we have this whole program. So we have a hamper system. We also have this thing that basically says, there's stuff you have. There's the hand you're dealt. Some of it's money, time, talent. I don't know what it is. We're going to connect you with people who have needs that might need exactly what you have. We call it Friends Helping Friends. I'd encourage you, go on there. Start with something. Try something. Instead of buying a coffee next week, donate $5. Right? That's part of the hand you were dealt. Again, not out of guilt. That's why I had this kind of weird feeling of like, should we feel guilty for being on our phones? No. But I think we should think long and hard and deeply about burying what we have in the backyard and doing nothing with it. I think our tradition is designed to inspire us to more than that. It's designed to inspire us to not play the victim card, not say, there's nothing I have. They have more than I do. Look it, it's Bill and Melinda Gates, $1.2 billion. What can I do? I think what I need to hear, and I hope you can hear it too, is there's things that I have in my life that I can share with the people around me and make my life better. I can take some time to recharge so when I come home to my wife, I'm not a cranky bastard. I can reach out to friends who need me. I can help people. I have a certain kind of brain. It allows me to do certain things. I was born in Canada, which means there's a whole lot I can do, right? I don't have to worry about my safety for a whole lot. Well, I try and put myself in danger pretty regularly. But outside of that, my encouragement, my desire, my prayer for all of us is to ask ourselves, what hand were we dealt? And how do we play that hand to make the world a better place? How's that for a Christmas message? Next week, we start a new series. It's called Navigating COVID Christmas. I don't know about you, but I have no freaking clue what this Christmas is going to look like. I think probably all of us need some wisdom, but the reality is there's people who've been through this before us, and there's some good things to know if you're trying to do what we're trying to do this Christmas. I really encourage you to come out. Have a great week. I put my email up on stage or up on screen. Questions, comments. If there's something you're saying, hey, look, I have it too. I don't know what to do with it. Send me an email. Let's figure it out. But I think we can change the world with the hand we were dealt. Have a great week, everybody.